Well, hello there, ladies and gentlemen, and good evening. The MSS crew is back and welcoming you here in the Fred Bertelsen Memorial Old Time Radio Room of Radio Out of the Past. In addition, we are thanking you for joining us. My name is Luis Jr., the MSS host, and we are bringing you this program today, the 21st of November, 2015. As promised last week, we are back and hooking you up with those OTR surprises that you have come to love and enjoy. I'm here assisting with bringing you another exciting internet broadcast of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise, and we have another hour-long program set up, geared up, and ready to go for your listening enjoyment. So why don't I introduce the presenter for tonight's program? And he just so happens to need not much of an introduction, because he happens to be the captain of our Canadian crew. Sometimes he can be a really nice guy. Rotten Rick Spurgeon. Yep, he cooked another one up in his home studio and is ready to unload it onto you here tonight. So without any further delays, I would just like to ask everyone to please sit back, grab your favorite drinks and snacks, and enjoy the program. Rotten Rick, the microphone is yours.
I love to listen to my radio. See how it thrills me when I hear it go.
Good morning, kiddies.
That's when I think of you. When shadows fall at the close of the day, I turn on the switch and it starts into play.
Thank you, Luis, and welcome into MSS with Rotten Rick. You know, I've been thinking that it's really unfair with Michael's Saturday Surprise that you get all the surprises and we get to hear the stuff we're already doing. So tonight, I'm going to participate. I'm going to be as surprised as you are. I've picked a series that I haven't heard before. I have no real clue about it, except I suspect it's kind of a mystery intrigue type series. So it should be kind of fun that way. But I have not listened to it. I can't say you haven't. Probably you haven't. And so let's try it together. Either we're going to find something we like or not. But that's the essence of Michael's Saturday Surprise. So now comes an episode of a series called Fear on Four.
Welcome once more, ladies and gentlemen. And this week, it's story number 13. An unlucky number, of course, especially for me, as this is my last story, but only for a while. I hope. This particular story was told to me by Bram Stoker, the man who created that other man in black, the gaunt, insatiable Dracula. I like to think that the immortal Count himself enjoys listening to Fear on Four, accompanied by his three shrouded daughters, the wolves howling outside, the rats scurrying in the blood-soaked corners of the room. In fact, rats feature very much in the story I'm about to tell. The story of The Judge's House. It's an old and rambling house, in the Jacobean style, with heavy gables and windows unusually small and set higher than customary in such houses. It is surrounded, entirely surrounded, with a high brick wall, massively built. Indeed, it looks like a fortification, and this impression is deepened by the presence on the roof of a small round tower of weathered stone, which houses an old alarm bell. The house is empty. It has been empty for many, many years. All about it there hangs an air of desolation. It stands some distance from the little town of Benchurch, in the midst of a small tract of weedy parkland. But all these things, the absolute, the unutterable loneliness of the place, only makes it seem the more desirable to Malcolm Malcolmson this year of his final examinations. He needs solitude, and that is something he will certainly find in this house, of all houses.
Mr. Carnford?
The same, sir. Carnford, Carnford and Frogmore Estate Agents at your service. I'm the Carnford in the middle.
How do you do? My name is Malcolmson. Malcolm Malcolmson. You will have had my letter?
Mr. Malcolmson. Oh, to be sure. Yes, indeed. You wanted to rent the old house along the Rivington Road. Yes, yes.
I gather it's available.
Oh, certainly. The owners will be only too delighted, I'm sure. It's a lonely old place. Of course, however...
That's exactly why I wanted, Mr. Carnford. I think I told you I'm reading for the mathematical tripos.
Of course. Yes, indeed. You wanted peace and quiet. Most necessary. Yes. If it's solitude you want, you'll find it in the judge's house. Oh, yes.
The judge's house, you say?
That's what they all call the old house hereabouts. Used to belong to some old judge. Terrible man, terrible. Long time ago, of course. A couple of hundred years, at the very least.
I dare say he'll hardly trouble me if it was as long ago as all that, Mr. Carnford, no matter how terrible he was. Why was he terrible, by the way?
Oh, strange kind of fellow. Always getting people hanged. Very harsh. Had a kind of obsession, you know. Very cruel. As a matter of fact, Mr. Malcolmson, I might as well tell you myself before the locals gossip it out of all perspective to you. There's a sort of... Well, a kind of... something. A kind of prejudice, you see.
What kind of prejudice?
Oh, nothing much. You know the sort of thing. It's been empty so long, you see, and it's so old and desolate. You know the kind of thing that grows up around places like that. To tell you the truth, that's why we're willing to let you have the place so cheaply, you see. If only to accustom the people round here to seeing it inhabited.
They won't see much sign of its being inhabited, Mr. Carnford. I'll be too busy at my books to show myself.
Oh, to be sure. To be sure. And I suppose that as a scholar, you are hardly the kind to worry about these absurd prejudices.
My dear Mr. Carnford, for the next few weeks, I shall be far too concerned with the mysteries of elliptical functions and harmonical progressions to worry about any other kind of mysteries. Now, if I agree to pay you, say, 3 months' rent in advance?
That would be excellent.
Then I could move in straight away, do you think? I'm anxious to start work as soon as I can.
You shall have the key this moment.
Oh, and could you perhaps recommend some local woman who could come in to keep the place clean for me and do some simple meals?
I have the very woman you want, Mr. Malcolmson. She was in here only yesterday asking if I could find any work for her. Let me see now. I have a note of her name somewhere.
Oh, and Mr. Comfort, I must get someone to bring my things up from the station.
Oh, certainly, certainly. Try Tovey and Sprott in Bridge Street. They're the best, I think.
Right.
Yes. Mrs. Dempster. That's it. Mrs. Dempster.
Mrs. Dempster?
Yes, sir?
Mrs. Dempster, I've decided to have most of my things in the dining room here.
Yes, sir.
It's big enough, you see, and I can work at the table here beside the fire. And my little folding bed will fit nicely into that corner over there.
Yes, sir. But it's not a very cheerful room for you, sir.
Oh, I dare say I shall manage, Mrs. Dempster. I was too busy to notice if it's cheerful or not.
Yes, sir. All them old portraits and things on the walls is pretty dull for a young man like yourself, sir. There ain't none of them what you'd say handsome, sir.
Better and better. I wouldn't want my mind distracted by a gallery of young nudes, for instance.
No, sir. I suppose not. You know what that is, sir, of course.
Some kind of bell rope, from the way it's hanging.
Yes, sir. That there alarm bell on the roof, sir. Runs right up, it does, through the ceiling. They do say... Well, never mind, it's only gossip. I remember that old bell ringing once, sir. Caused a dreadful stir in Benchurch. Dreadful. Ringing away.
You mean of its own accord?
Oh, no, sir. There was folk living in the house in them days, sir. I reckon it were about 50 years ago, near enough. I was only a girl myself. Some young folk tried it on for a lark, I suppose.
Well, I'm hardly likely to want to try any larks, Mrs. Dempster.
You might need it for other things, sir.
What, for instance?
Well, some says one thing, some says another, sir. It ain't for me to tell tales. Still, all the same, no kin of mine would sleep here of a night, sir, bell or no bell. There ain't nobody lived in this house for 50 years. Not since those young folk went away. And there's no telling why they did go away, sir.
No, indeed, Mrs. Dempster. No telling. So perhaps you had better not tell me yourself, eh? Now, have I got everything, I wonder?
A screen, sir. I reckon you'll need a screen.
What for?
Put round your bed. There's one upstairs. I'll fetch it down. It's very draughty in this big room. You'll need a screen. Oh, mind you, I wouldn't like a screen myself, with all kinds of things to put their heads round the sides and over the top to look at me.
Mrs. Dempster, you're not afraid of ghosts, are you?
Well, no, sir. At least maybe not what you'd call ghosts. There ain't really such things as ghosts, I always say. Ghosts is always something else than what folks think they are. Ghosts is creaky doors and rats and mice and beetles and such. Here, look at that old wainscot round the wall there. There's rats in plenty there, if you ask me. I dare say you'll hear 'em too, of a night.
They won't disturb me, Mrs. Dempster.
No, sir. But it's different in the night. And if I was to have a screen round my bed in a room like this, with the thought of that old judge and his hangings and them rats all scampering, well, I wouldn't, sir, and that's a fact.
Yes, I'm sure you wouldn't. Well, now, if you'd be good enough to bring me a kettle and some tea things, I can get to work straight away. I keep myself going with tea in the night time, you know, Mrs. Dempster.
Yes, sir. But don't sit up too late, sir. Not good for your health.
I'll try, Mrs. Dempster. I promise you, I'll try. Oh, and you'll come in the morning to get some breakfast for me, say, 8:30?
I will, sir. Well, I'll get your tea things in and leave you to it, then.
Yes, thank you, Mrs. Dempster. Oh, one more thing before you go.
Yeah?
I meant to ask Mr. Comfort, this old judge that used to live here, what was his name?
Well, to tell you the truth, sir, I don't rightly know. I did hear it once. Began with a J, if I mind right. Came here from the West Country to settle down for a bit, they do say. Had to lie low or something. He was that unpopular with his hangings. A terrible, cruel man, they say.
The West Country? Oh, that wouldn't have been...
Wait now, sir. I remember. Yes. Jeffers, that was it. No. Jeffries. Yes. I'm sure of it. Judge Jeffries, that was the name, sir. Judge Jeffries.
Sir Malcolm Malcolmson, well pleased with the success of his plan to find solitude, settled down for his first night in the judge's house. With his books piled on the table, he put fresh wood on the fire, trimmed his oil lamp, and settled himself to a spell of hard work. He went on without a pause until about 11:00, and then stopped to make himself a cup of tea. The rest was a great luxury to him, and he enjoyed it with a sense of voluptuous ease. The renewed fire leapt and sparkled and threw strange shadows through the ancient, gloomy room. He sipped his tea and reveled in the sense of his isolation. And then, only then, did he begin to notice the little rustling, whispering sound that was filling the air.
God, Rats. The place is full of rats. Old Mrs. D was right. Surely they can't have been at it all the time I was reading. I must have noticed them. They're busy enough now, at any rate. What was it the old soul said? Rats is ghosts, and ghosts is rats. Well, I reckon it's just their way of welcoming a stranger. They've been lonely for too long. That's what it is.
Don't worry, my small friends. Don't worry. I've come to keep you company now. Don't worry.
He smiles to himself and picks up the green shaded oil lamp from the table. He goes round the room, wondering that so beautiful an old house had been so long neglected. The carving of the oak on the panels of the wainscot is magnificent. The old portraits above are fine and mellow, although most of them are too heavily covered in dust for him to be able to make out much detail. Here and there, he sees some crack or hole that is blocked for a moment by the face of a rat, its bright eyes glittering in the light. They seem most concentrated in numbers in the corner of the old room where the long, slender bell rope hangs down beside a great portrait, larger and more imposing than all the rest. He is looking for a chair to stand on to examine the bell rope more closely at the point where it enters the ceiling, the gathering place, as it seems, of the small, busy host of rats. When he suddenly becomes aware that, just as quickly as it had begun, the noise all round him has stopped. He stays poised in his movement, disturbed unaccountably by the sudden quiet, and in an instant, in spite of his self-possession, a tremor of uneasiness passes through him. There, on a great high-backed carved oak chair beside the fire, which in the interval has died a little, there, steadily regarding him with baleful glowing eyes, is an enormous rat. He recovers himself immediately and makes as if to drive it away. It does not stir, but shows its great white teeth in anger, and its cruel eyes shine in the lamplight with an added vindictiveness. He seizes the poker and runs at it to kill it, but with a flashing glance that is the very essence of hate, it jumps on the floor, runs across the room, and scampers up the rope of the alarm bell to disappear behind the great portrait. Malcolmson stands in the silence, the poker in his hand, half ashamed of his fear, watching the rope, still gently swaying. He shrugs and goes back to his table, and in a little while is so immersed in his studies again that the whole incident is forgotten. He works in the lamplit silence until dawn, and then, at last, worn out, he goes to bed.
Morning, sir. Breakfast.
What? What's that? It's you, Mrs. Dempster. Good morning.
I brought your breakfast in, sir. It's nearly 9. I thought I wouldn't wait much longer.
9 o'clock? Good heavens, I had no idea. Thank you, Mrs. Dempster. Will you put the tray down there?
Looks to me as if you was overdoing it a bit, sir. Real washed out you look. Was you working late?
Late enough, I suppose. About 5 o'clock, I think.
You wasn't worried by anything, I hope, sir? I mean, in the night?
Oh, I was all right. You had the truth of it when you said the place was full of rats, Mrs. Dempster. They had a regular circus in here last night.
Rats? Ugh. I don't hold much with rats, sir. Dirty things.
There was one wicked-looking old devil sat up in that old chair by the fire there. Then went running up the bell rope. I didn't much like the look of him.
Better take care, sir. Maybe it wasn't only an old devil. Maybe it was the old devil.
Mrs. Dempster, I believe you're not as enlightened as I thought you were yesterday. I believe you think there might be things here after all, in spite of what you said.
Well, it's all very well for you young folk to laugh, sir. It's just I don't hold with nosing into things too much. There's things it's better not to laugh at, if you ask me. Anyway, if I was you, I'd get some rat poison. Though if it was the old devil, I dare say you wouldn't get rid of him with that.
He won't worry me, Mrs. Dempster. Not when I have a good set of problems in thermodynamics to keep my mind busy. Oh, by the way, there's something I want you to do for me today. You could fit it in during my walk this afternoon, perhaps.
Anything you want, sir. What is it?
Will you dust those old portraits? I want to have a good look at them. Especially that big one there, the one beside the bell rope. Will you do it?
Yes, sir. Just as you say. If you want it, sir. If you really want it.
Malcolmson rises and has his breakfast. Outside, the weather is damp and unpleasant, and so he passes the time in further study. In the afternoon, the skies clear a little, and he goes for a walk into Benchurch by way of taking exercise. He stays rather later than he'd intended, so it's after dark when he gets back to the house. Mrs. Dempster has gone, leaving a cold supper for him on a tray. He eats it hungrily, and once more settles himself down in the great dining room for a night of hard work. This time, the scampering of the little army of rats begins earlier, and they disturb him more than they'd done the previous night. They scamper up and down and under and over. They squeak and scratch and gnaw. Getting bolder by degrees, they come out of their holes from the chinks and cracks and crannies in the wainscoting till their eyes shine like small red lamps in the firelight. He rises to his feet and seizes the reading lamp from the table. There is a hasty scurrying sound, and the rats go scampering away and disappear. And again, as suddenly as it has begun, he discovers that the endless gnawing and squealing ceases, and he's all alone, in utter silence, his heart beating faster than normal. And as he draws a deep breath to steady himself, a long, strange thrill of fear goes through him. For the first time since Mrs. Dempster has dusted it, he's able to see, quite clearly in the lamplight, the great portrait that hangs on the wall beside the bell rope. It is the portrait of a judge, the judge, in his full robes of scarlet and ermine. The face is strong and merciless, evil and vindictive, with a dark, sensual mouth and a hooked nose like that of a bird of prey. Yet what disturbs the young man most is that the judge in the portrait is seated in a high-backed chair of carved oak beside a great stone fireplace, and behind the judge, hanging down from the ceiling, its end lying coiled on the floor, is a rope, a hangman's rope. The room in the portrait is the room in which he stands. The rope in the portrait is the bell rope. He had thought it unusually supple when first he'd seen it, the end of it worn and smooth, as if from much movement in a running noose. He swings round towards the fireplace to look at the actual counterpart of the chair in the portrait, and he recoils in such fear that the green shaded lamp nearly falls from his hand. In the armchair, the judge's armchair, sits the enormous rat he had seen there the night before. And its eyes, as they regard him, have a peculiar brilliance. They glow with an unutterable malignance. He has seen those eyes before. They are the eyes, the identical eyes, small, cunning, intolerably evil, in the portrait above his head. For an instant he stands frozen. Then he leaps forward, his hand upraised, but the creature again forestalls him. With a sudden, swift movement, it jumps from the chair and scuttles rapidly across the room.
then up the swaying bell rope into a jagged, dark hole in the corner of the canvas of the portrait.
I should be working at my books. For some reason, I'm unaccountably nervous. And I'm unable to settle. To calm my mind, I've taken up my pen to write to you. I know I owe you a letter in any case. Outside, the wind has risen and seems to be growing always in strength. It is suddenly strangely cold. Of the great fire I've built. A few moments ago I had to take a neat brandy, or I might have been unable to steady my hand to hold the pen at all. I think you know that I am not a particularly imaginative man. If anything, I can be blamed for always taking a materialistic view of things. Yet, as I sit here in this ancient room, I am oppressed with a sense of evil. You did not tell me when you recommended this old house as the very place I was looking for to find peace and quiet that there were any dark associations attached to it. When I heard strange rumors concerning it, I paid no attention to them. Even now, I try to regard them as irrational superstitions. Yet an hour ago, less than an hour ago, I found myself in the grip of mortal terror. Indeed, it is to calm my nerves from the experience that I write to you now. The house here is infested with rats. Normally, I'm not afraid of rats, indeed. At first, I almost welcomed their scamperings as a little sound to keep me company in the night. Here, in this very room, I saw a rat that was bigger than any I'd ever seen in my life before. And there was also a something all about it that I cannot express, but which seemed to me to be charged with evil. What impressed and terrified me most as I looked at it was that its eyes, red, dreadful eyes were, and I must say it, however wild and strange it may seem, were human eyes. Recognizable human eyes. Above me here, as I sit at my table, is a portrait. And when I raise my own eyes to look at it,
shrouded glow of the lamplight, a million little eyes regarding him. From every crack and cranny, unwinkingly they gaze. He sees small furry bodies gathered close in a circle all round him, on the high-backed chairs, on the frames of the pictures, clinging motionless along the very top of the bell rope itself. The bell rope is quickly laden with rats, yet his fear does not spring from their eyes. He does not only fear the rats, it is something else that he sees that freezes him to the spot. In the center of the great portrait above him, the portrait of the judge, is a huge, irregular patch of brown, naked canvas, as fresh as when it was stretched on the frame. The background is as before, but the figure, the central figure, has disappeared. The judge is no longer there. In the oaken chair, the chair on which had sat the monstrous red-eyed rat, sits now the judge himself. His robes of scarlet shine in the flicker of the firelight. On his head, above the evil eyes, a black cap.
In his withered white hands is the supple end of the bell rope, the hangman's rope. And even as Malcolmson stares in a paralysis of fear, the monstrous, stooping figure rises, still smoothing the end of the rope in his fingers and forming it to a coil and then to a noose. And with his eyes aglow in a red flame of triumph, he advances towards the helpless figure of the student, his long, strong, scarlet arms stretched out to him.
Help! Help! Oh, my God! Help! Help! Help!
When the alarm bell of the judge's house sounds out across the countryside, a startled, huddled crowd assembles, led by an anxious Mrs. Dempster. Lights and torches appear, hurrying over the fields and through the desolate parkland. The bell still clangs as the white-faced helpers force their way into the great, dark house and move, terror-stricken, into the dining room. As they crowd in the doorway, wide-eyed and silent, they see why the bell is sounding. Swaying slowly back and forth at the rope's end is the twisted body of the young student. On the face of the judge in the portrait beside him is a smile of dark, malignant triumph. And now, sadly, it's time to bid you au revoir, as I return once more to the depths of Broadcasting House. Thank you for sharing my 13 stories, and a big thank you, of course, this week to David Timpson, who played the unfortunate Malcolmson, Tessa Worsley, who was Mrs. Dempster, and Norman Bird, who played the part of Carnford. The story was written by Bram Stoker, adapted by John Keir Cross, and directed by Jerry Jones. My name is Edward D'Souza, your man in black. Bidding you au revoir.
Well, was that interesting? Or was it not? You know, I'm continuing in this mood. I didn't plan to do this, but I'm intrigued by what we can find without knowing what we're finding. So our next show is going to be on the same line. So if you're not liking what we're doing, well, maybe you can have a night off. At least half of it anyway. But for now, I'm turning to another series that I know nothing about. I have a hunch it may have been an NPR type of series. But this one tries to, I think, be a hybrid of Lights Out and Inner Sanctum. And does it come off? Well, nobody can do the originals, of course. But is it worthy? Let's give it a half an hour trial to find out.
Uncharted waters of the terrifying, the unexplained, the mystifying. What could be more mystifying than the classic incarnation of evil? Call him Mephistopheles, Beelzebub, Satan, or Devil. By whatever name, he is the human form of the ultimate temptation. It is proverbial to cast evil in the guise of a mysterious stranger with horns and a pointed tail. But if the devil were to take human form today, what might he be? A politician? A salesman? Or perhaps something more subtle, even diabolical? Tonight, we explore the possibility of doing real magic. And what would happen if a modern-day South were given too much power? I'll be back in a moment with the first act of For My Next Trick.
Come join your lung association and discover the facts of life and breath. Learn how air pollution is affecting you and your children and what you can do to breathe easier. That's what the Lung Association is all about. They've almost licked TB. They're battling smoking and other breath robbers. And with your assistance, lung associations across the country can help clean the air.
Write for free information on how you can help. Your Lung Association brings you this public service message because they care about every breath you take.
Throughout history, many people have been accused of being in league with the devil. But what is evil? Who creates it? Does it remain the same from generation to generation? Or does it change form, method, indeed character, from one age to the next? A full-time carnival, one of those conglomerations of freaks that in the middle of this country's depression would miraculously appear in the small hamlets of mid-America, exhibit its collection of novelties, and then just as suddenly vanish.
Hurry, hurry, hurry! Witness Mystic Martin, the magical marvel. See feats of magic never before performed for civilized man. It's all on the inside, and it's all yours for one thin dime, one-tenth of a dollar. Hurry, hurry, hurry! And now, ladies and gentlemen, the greatest magician of modern times, Mystic Martin.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. For my first illusion, I should like to borrow a man's hat. Well, now, any hat will do. Thank you, sir. My assistant, Millie, shall fetch it from you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, every magician is supposed to produce a rabbit from a hat. But I intend to produce a rabbit, not from my own hat, but from this hat so kindly donated by the gentleman in the third row. Now, with a few magic words and a wave over the hat, I shall produce a live rabbit. Alakazam! Alakazam! And here we have... somewhere we have...
Yeah.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you'll just have a little bit of patience here, I'll be able to... If you'd give me another chance,
ladies and gentlemen, if you'll just give Mystic Martin a few more moments, I'm sure you'll... That is, he'll be able to... forget it.
What's the matter, Michael?
What's the matter? Millie, didn't you see?
Well, yes, but...
Well, then what are you asking for? That's the third time in 2 days Chester has stuck his tail out of my coat.
But the sawing a woman in half trick went all right at the last show, didn't it?
Sure. But that's only the second time we've gotten it right this week. Somehow, something goes wrong at every show.
Michael, it'll get better with practice.
Millie, we don't have time to practice. The carnival owner said that unless we get the act together by the weekend, we're fired.
But what will we do then?
I don't know. Magic is the only thing I know, and jobs aren't easy to come by these days.
Hey, Martin, you've got a visitor.
A visitor?
Yeah, some fan, I guess. Don't ask me how. Even I don't like your show, and I'm paid to like it. Want to see him?
Why not? Right now, I guess I need all the fans I can get.
Okay. Hey, mister, the great Martin will see you.
Gee, Millie, do you think somebody liked the show?
Michael, I don't know.
Hello, Michael.
Carl Owen. Millie, it's Carl Owen. Remember? He built the Saw Woman in Half cabinet for us.
Of course. How are you, Carl?
Fine, Millie.
Well, what are you doing in these parts, Carl? I thought you stayed pretty much in Los Angeles.
I do, ordinarily. But Blackstone is opening a new show in Chicago, and I delivered some props to the theater.
When I heard you were playing the area, I thought I'd drop in and see what you were doing.
Ah, pretty much the same old stuff.
Yes, I see.
Oh, did you see the last show, Carl?
Yes.
Ah, well, you should have seen the one last night. We finished that one. What I mean,
Michael,
is that...
I'm afraid I know what you mean.
No?
Yes.
Carl, it's really not as bad as...
Don't worry, Millie. I'm not here to recall my illusion. But I would like to have a talk with Michael.
All right. I'll set up the next show. Nice to see you, Carl.
Nice seeing you, Millie. Well, Michael?
You don't need to say it. I know.
Michael, when I built the sawing a lady illusion for you, I thought you might have some talent. I thought you might rise above the poor showings you had in Los Angeles. I thought that on the road playing to audiences that hadn't seen a lot of magic, you might make a go of it. But let's face it, Michael, you just don't have what it takes to be a great magician. I'm afraid you aren't even a good one.
What you're saying is, I'm not even a bad one, right, Carl?
Yes, I guess that's what I mean, Michael.
But isn't there any way I could get better?
I don't know, Michael. After what I saw today, well, my best advice to you is to try to find some ordinary job and give up the idea of being a magician.
Give it up?
That's it. Because the only way you could be a good magician is if you could do real magic.
Real magic.
Real magic. Well, good to see you again, Michael. Say goodbye to Millie for me.
Huh?
I said, say goodbye to Millie for me.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Goodbye, Michael.
Real magic. What if I could do real magic? No phony boxes, no screens, just real magic. Just wave my hand and it happens. Blink an eye and it happens. Don't do anything and it happens.
Michael?
Huh?
Has Carl gone?
Carl? Oh, yeah, he's gone, huh?
Well, what did he say?
He said I should do real magic.
Real magic?
Oh, well, think of it, Nellie. I could do it anywhere, anytime. Just point a finger and make anything disappear. Point it again and it reappears.
Michael, calm down.
Nobody would know how I did it. Not even other magicians. Well, I'd be the biggest thing in show business.
Michael, please.
I'd have the whole world at my feet.
Michael!
That's it. Real magic. I'd sell my soul to do real magic.
Mr. Martin?
What?
You are Mystic Martin.
Well, yes, of course.
I thought so. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Well, how do you do? This is my assistant.
Yes, Millicent Hendricks. I know that also. A pleasure.
How did you know?
Your name. In my business, it's good to know a lot of things about a lot of people, Miss Hendricks.
Your business?
Yes, Mr. Martin. I'm what you call a talent scout. I search out promising people of all types and recruit them.
Michael, I think I'll go reset the props so you and Mr.
DeVille.
Yes, Mr. DeVille. Can talk alone.
A charming girl, Mr. Martin.
Yes. Now, what was it you were saying about me?
That's what I like. Someone who gets right to the point. And so shall I. I overheard you say something about doing real magic.
Overheard? From where?
An advantageous position. Real magic, Mr. Martin. That's what you said, wasn't it?
Well, yes, but that was just wishful excitement.
Perhaps. But what if it could be true? Imagine, just for a moment, that it were really possible.
But it isn't.
But what if it was? Imagine the power to do anything you wanted, anywhere, anytime. That's what you were thinking about, wasn't it? That's what you'd sell your soul for, isn't it?
Well, yes. But just a minute. All that's impossible. What are you getting at?
I want to make you the greatest magician of all time. I want to give you the ability to perform real magic. I want to see your name up in lights on every marquee from east to west.
But why?
As I said, I recruit talented people for special assignments. I am recruiting you, Mr. Martin. All I need is your signature on this contract.
Say, where did that come from?
I know a few tricks myself, Mr. Martin.
Wait a minute. You want to do all of this for me. But what's in it for you?
Well, now, that's fairly well known, isn't it?
What did you say your name was?
Ah, you finally guessed.
DeVille.
Well, DeVille is what I call myself in this century. In past years, I've been called some harsher-sounding names. Perhaps at the turn of the next century, I'll have changed again to keep modern.
And that contract?
The usual. Your name goes on the bottom line. I make you the world's greatest magician with the power to do real magic. When the time comes, I claim your soul and your mind. Simple.
Now, hold on. Not so simple. Now, I'm not sure I want to trade in my soul just yet.
Well, of course. Not right away.
Yeah, well, maybe not ever.
Come now, Mr. Martin. A moment ago, you were ready to relinquish everything just to do real magic. I'm offering you even more. Not just the power, but all the things that go with it. Fame, money, excitement. And you don't give up anything now. I just put it on account, so to speak.
Am I crazy? Here I am talking to whatever it is you are, and actually believing that you're him. That you really can do all of that. Ah, but you're not real. I'm just daydreaming. I must be.
Well, then, what have you got to lose?
What?
If I'm no more than a flight of romantic fantasy, then what can you lose by putting your signature on this contract? If I'm a mirage, then I'll fade away and you'll remain just what you were a few moments ago.
Just what I was.
But what if I'm not a daydream? What if I really can do what I say? Is a simple little soul so much to pay for what I offer, for what you really want to be?
Hey, Martin, boss gave me a message for you. Says I should wait till you're alone to deliver it. So here it is.
Alone?
Sure. Don't see anybody else here, do you? Anyway, boss says don't bother moving on with us to Keokuk. Says he's going to get a better act for the rest of the tour.
What? But he said that I had to the end of the week to...
Sorry, pal, but he saw your last show. Said he didn't figure you'd ever get any better.
Yeah, but... Where can I go? What can I do?
Beats me. See you around.
Well, Mr. Martin, what do you think of my proposition now?
He couldn't see you. Maybe you are. Maybe you can do what you say.
Of course!
What was that? How did my signature get on that paper?
Once you've convinced yourself, anything is possible. Come now, leave those cabinets and cylinders and other trinkets. From this day, no illusion is too impossible for you to perform. The power of real magic is yours. The world is waiting for you. You are what you never were before.
You need no specialist to tell you about air pollution. You're a professional expert with almost every breath you take, particularly if you live in the city. Your lung association would like your help in trying to clean up the air, starting with the use of mass transportation and cutting down on car use.
For free information on how the ordinary citizen can do extraordinary things to clear the air, write to your lung association. They offer you this public service message because they care about every breath you take.
Most dreamed of fantasy. What is absolute power worth? And given that power, how far can it take you?
Hello, Millie.
Hello, Carl. Thank you for coming.
You sounded so worried on the phone, I had to. But why meet here in front of the theater? Why not in your dressing room? You must have a big one, judging from the size of Michael's show.
Yes, it's all right. But I don't feel I belong there. I don't feel I belong with Michael at all anymore. Have you seen the show?
Yes, I saw it last night.
And you didn't come backstage to say hello?
I wanted to, but I had an odd feeling that the Michael Martin inside this theater isn't the same one I knew.
I've had the same feeling lately, Carl. That's why I called you. I've been losing touch with Michael. It's like I'm no longer his assistant or his friend.
What do you mean?
Well, he doesn't seem to need me anymore. I'm still in the act, but I'm more stage dressing than a real assistant. I don't handle anything anymore. He says I don't have to because everything works itself. He won't tell me how any of the new illusions operate. And the few I've been able to look at closely don't give a hint of how they work.
Yes, I've been hearing how Michael has devised all new methods for a show. He's been fooling the other magicians pretty badly.
Carl, please come inside and see Michael. Maybe you can tell what's come over him.
I don't know, Millie.
Please, for me.
All right. The palace. The pinnacle of show business. An awful lot of magicians would give anything to work here.
I think one may have given too much. is Martin's dressing room.
Star on the door. Pretty good. Guess Michael isn't here, Millie.
I don't understand it. He almost never leaves the dressing room between shows.
Well, apparently he did this time.
I guess I wasted your time, Carl.
It's never a waste of time to see an old friend.
Oh, we didn't hear you come in, Michael.
Well, in a way, I didn't. How are you, Carl? You haven't changed a bit.
Well, you certainly have. Goatee, mustache. Your face looks thinner, too.
Well, one must keep up one's image of the world's greatest magician. Now, mustn't one?
Indeed. You seem to have hit the right formula, all right.
Well, not really a formula, Carl. I just decided that if I was going to make it big in the magic world, I had to produce my miracles in a way that no other magician could. I succeeded in discovering a new method. And it's worked very well.
Yes, it certainly has. But has it been worth the price?
I don't think I understand.
You changed, Michael. Millie knows. What's more, I can tell just from your manner at the performance last night. Now, Michael Martin I knew wasn't much of a magician, but he was a pleasant, friendly, humble person. Now you're a great show business phenomenon. But what has happened to the man behind the black cape? Is he the same person?
So what makes you think I've changed?
I'm not sure, but there's a different feeling about the new Michael Martin.
Come now, Carl. Are you really interested in me? Are you just jealous because I've been fooling a lot of people with illusions you didn't create?
Michael!
It's all right, Millie. That's another thing. I saw your show last night.
You didn't like it?
No, I didn't say that. It was very entertaining, very astounding. But it bothered me. Take the trick with the elephant, for instance.
Ah, yes. One of my better illusions. I march the elephant on stage, pass a large hoop over her, and as the hoop descends, the elephant dematerializes into thin air.
Michael, that trick is impossible.
Impossible?
Yes. I've been building magic illusions for 50 years. I've seen them all, know how they all work. There's no trick any magician can do that can fool me.
So?
So last night, you fooled me. Not with one trick, not with a couple of tricks. With every trick.
So I fooled you. What are you so upset about?
Because if anyone can perform a trick that fools me, then it isn't trickery. It isn't an illusion.
Oh? Well, what is it?
It's magic. Real magic. It's real magic or...
Or
it's evil.
Carl, I'm afraid you've reached a time in your life when things are happening you cannot understand. And when you can't understand them, you assume they're, well, evil. I've simply developed a new way to do magic, Carl. A way that fools even you. But that's progress now, isn't it?
Progress? I wonder. But I must go. It was nice seeing you again, Millie.
Must you go?
Yes. I can be of no use here.
Carl, I regret if I've upset you.
Upset me? No, not really. Concerned me, yes.
Concerned?
I'm concerned that even you may not know how deeply you've paid for your new power. Goodbye, Michael.
Michael, is it evil?
What?
Carl said that if your illusions aren't trickery, then they're evil. Are they?
Millie, Carl distrusts what he doesn't understand. An attitude from the Dark Ages, unfortunately.
Michael, you have to answer my question.
Millie, what's evil to one person is merely expedient to someone else. Now, why don't you go to your dressing room and get ready for this evening's performance, hmm?
All right.
She doesn't understand. But then how could she? Well, better get ready myself.
My, you're getting to look more like me than I do.
Oh, DeVille. I didn't hear you come in.
Well, in a way I didn't. But you are becoming almost the image of me, Mr. Martin.
Well, I decided that if I'm in league with the devil, I might as well look like him.
I suppose. But that phrase, in league, I've never thought of.
I'm sorry, Michael. I think I left.
Come in, my dear.
Millie, you remember Mr. DeVille, don't you?
Yes, I think so.
Yes, it's been almost 3 years, hasn't it?
I guess so.
Look, we've got to get ready for the evening show. What is it you want?
I'm afraid there isn't going to be an evening show, Mr. Martin, tonight or ever.
What?
Yes, your contract has come due, and I'm here to collect. Your soul is mine.
Oh, no!
It's only been a few years. Now, my career is just starting. I could go on for years.
Yes, you could probably, but not now. In some future life, perhaps. If I choose.
Well, I've got lots of new illusions that I haven't even tried yet. I thought of making someone in the audience disappear. Or even having the whole audience disappear.
Spectacular feats, I'm sure, but I'm afraid they will never be seen. Your audiences can imagine them as something you might have done had you not so suddenly disappeared.
What?
Of course. What did you think? I was going to kill you or something? Much too violent. No, you shall simply disappear, leaving no trace.
Oh, my God. Well, what about Millie? Now, she's heard. She'll know.
Yes, that could present a problem. Of course, I could take her with us.
No!
Yet I think I shall just leave her. The story she would tell would be so fantastic that no one would believe it. In fact, it's been a saving grace during my entire career. No one ever believes the eyewitness accounts of my escapades.
Yeah, but look, I...
Look, Martin, you made a bargain with me. You got what you asked for. More, in fact. Now it's time to settle up. Your soul is mine, and I want it now.
What if I said you couldn't have it?
Others have tried that tactic, and it's never worked. They're all mine now.
Well, I'm not going.
Oh, he's not going. My Hades, listen to that. He's not going.
Don't laugh at me.
Why? What are you going to do about it?
Michael, why are you looking like that?
Real magic, Millie. I can do real magic. People have sold their souls to the devil before, but no one has ever asked for the power I have.
What are you doing, Martin?
The ultimate trick, DeVille. You gave me the power to do real magic. But do you know how much power that really is? I never knew. But now we're both going to find out.
What are you doing?
No! Stop! You can't do this! We'll see just what I can do, DeVille!
Stop! I'll keep you on time, you can! Go on, stop! Stop! Stop!
Circumstances. But if temptations change, who's to say that the tempter does not change also? Who's to say that the highest office of hell does not have its contenders to the throne? And that the current occupier of that office is merely an incumbent, holding sway until the next election comes around? I'll be back in just a moment.
Put a good dream to work and get real action, citizen action. We can clean up the world, starting with each and every community throughout the nation. Cars tuned away from pollution, the use of public transportation, the support of clean air laws. That's the big road to a real clean air dream come true. Help that dream now. Write your lung association for free information on how you can help. They bring you this public service message because they care about every breath you take.
Next on Darkness.
Hello, Miss Agnes, Mr. Ossifee.
Officer Lyons, what a pleasant surprise. Can you stay for tea?
Thank you kindly, but I only stopped by to see that you were safe.
Who would want to harm either of us?
I don't know. But them gold watches in the front window, well, they can attract the wrong element.
Well, if we don't display them, how can we get customers?
I may be stepping out of line, but... Ladies, the neighborhood isn't the same as it was. We don't have your kind of genteel society anymore. These days, it's full of junkies and thugs.
We've never had a speck of trouble here, not in 52 years.
Anyhow, please make sure all the doors and windows are secured. You don't want any unexpected guests.
Next time, we meet two elderly sisters who run an antique shop in their home. Unfortunately, their once refined neighborhood has changed quite a bit. Poor dears, they're perfect targets for... But you'll find out. It's a chilling darkness drama by Ken Jarrett called Catch Chill. Don't miss it. For My Next Trick was written and directed by Roger Rittner. Featured in the cast were Michael Rye, Joey DiAria, Wendy Allen, and Art Dutch. Also heard were Bill Irwin and Bob Farley. Sound patterns by David Surtees. Darkness is a Ken Jarrett, Roger Rittner radio production. Now, until next time, this is your host, Claude, wishing you good night. Forever.
Farewell, Claude. I don't think you'll quite make it into Raymond's category. But, you know, you gotta experiment. You gotta listen to see what's out there, and that helps you separate the wheat from the chaff and the favorites from the non-favorites, and sometimes they are intriguingly better or different, and sometimes they don't quite make it. What about tonight's two shows? Was it a waste of your time? Was it an interesting experiment? Was it fun? Well, that's for you to know and for me to find out. And, now that we've done that, it's about time for us to go out. Which means calling upon Luis again, his weekly adventure into radio, his brief patch of stardom. He's now coming into his full glory. He's puffing out his chest, measuring his biceps, spraying his tonsils, and on the count of three or so, we'll turn it over to him. Let's give him a chance to make sure he gets the spray. No, the other direction, Luis. Not the face. The throat. Right, that's that big thing down there. Yeah, open your... Yeah, you got it. It's in the mouth. Okay, good. Okay, you're all set? All right. Here you go. Luis, it's your turn. Let's hear those dulcet tones.
I love to listen to my radio. Gee, how it thrills me when I hear it go. Someday you'll hear it soon.
Okay, Rick, thanks a lot. You did a nice job setting him up, and now I will do a nicer job of bringing him back down. Okay, folks, that is just about going to wrap things up for this week's broadcast of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. I hope each and every one of you enjoyed each and every rotten minute of Rotten Rick's program tonight. If you have any questions, comments, complaints, maybe even a request or two, please address them to the MSS director. He can be found at michaemelli@earthlink.net. That's MIKEAMELI@earthlink.net. We will soon be releasing the key and turning the room over to you, the listening audience. Please do with it as you wish, for as long as you wish. Just remember, be nice to one another. As I've said it again and again and again and again, we will be back again next week with another exciting OTR surprise for your listening enjoyment. You know where to find us, how to find us, and when to find us. But before then, there will be some turkeys gobbling around and getting gobbled as well. So, between now and then, I wish that everyone will have a very happy Thanksgiving and a very happy holiday. Have a great night, a great weekend, and you know it, goodbye.